Welcome to the Successful Athletes Podcast presented by Trainer Road, where we interview successful athletes to make you a faster cyclist. And this week we're joined all the way from London with Joy Aboym. Joy, how are you?
I'm very well, Jonathan. Absolutely excited to be here.
Yeah. I'm excited to do this one too. You wrote in, you're a triathlete, and you wrote in that you had gone through, I think you might have written me right after this, but Ironman Hamburg. You were able to complete Ironman Hamburg, and it means a lot considering your past with triathlon. And I want to get into that today and talk about the barriers that you overcame. I want to talk about the agony of defeat and going through the challenges, and then what made you decide to, instead of leaving it just as business unresolved that you could leave in the past, what made you decide to take it head on? But before we do that, I want to get into a little bit. You mentioned that you were a runner and then you got into triathlon. So was that like, were you the sort of athlete that's a runner gone triathlon that commonly is like, I'll just make it through on the bike and I'll make it through on the swim? Or what was your approach to triathlon like with those three different disciplines at that point?
It was interesting because, yes, I did come from running, started running probably about 5 or so years before I then moved into, maybe 6 years actually, before I moved into triathlon. And I was kind of looking for a new challenge. It's pretty much as simple as that. So I had been running for a while and I had done this this activity. It was a kind of a multi-event activity at work where we kind of compete with other corporate organizations. It was a multi-day, multi-event thing. And it kind of got me, you know, really excited and wanting to do something more. So I thought, what else could I do or what could I do? And triathlon just happened. And so my swim wasn't that wonderful. I could just about swim. So I had to work on the swim. So I actually started to... I joined an intermediate swimming class. I think I did that for about 11 weeks or so. And so started to work on my swimming and then joined a triathlete team. Actually, they would come into the leisure center after my swimming class. And so I kind of, you know, had a chat with the coach and he thought, you know what, you're not too bad. So yes, you can come and join us. And so I started to swim and train with them. The bike, I could ride a bicycle. I didn't actually consider it so much a weakness, I would say, because of the distances I was doing. So doing sprints and doing Olympic distance, I always found that I could make up the time on the run. So I could just have a reasonably good bike, and then make up time on the run. And that kind of worked. So I had to just work on the swimming, get out there biking, and that was it. I kind of liked them all, and that was fine. One of the things that was a bit tricky was the open water swimming at the time. So actually transitioning from pool swim to open water, that required a complete mind shift.
Yeah, because and what was particularly challenging about it? Was it sighting and staying on pace, or was it dealing with the waves and undulations and the trying to time breathing? Speaking from personal experience and sucking so bad at swimming, I can't imagine going through it. Yeah.
I think a lot of it is in the mind, right? It's like, I can see the bottom of a pool. I can stand in the bottom of the pool, whether I need to or not, but I'm going into this open water space. I can't see the bottom. I can't stand in the bottom. And it's just, I don't know, it's just that kind of thing. I'm thinking, what if I need to stop? Okay, you tread water, but what if I need to stop? So it was just kind of all of that. It was quite, it took a little while, and the only way that I got over it really was practice, really. It was, getting accustomed to it, going in there and realizing, yes, it's, you know, you tread water, if you need to stop a bit, you can actually just stay there. Glad for wetsuits that help give that buoyancy as well. It took me a few seasons actually to be a bit more comfortable open water swimming, and then those mass starts as well. Because in triathlon, you'd always have these mass starts. So everybody's in the water and then the gun goes and then we're scrambling sort of thing, you know, and those things could always be a bit unnerving.
Yeah. And all that affects your breathing so directly. You know, when you carry that extra tension in the nerves, and then when your breathing rate goes off, then it compounds and you find yourself totally out of breath. Oh gosh. Yeah. I'm getting panicked just thinking about it. So was your swim, relatively speaking, you were a good runner. Was your swim your second place discipline, or was that the bike? Where did they kind of fall in that cascading order?
People would always ask me that, and I didn't know whether I could separate the two. The thing with the swim was always that mass start and then the open water, and then that kind of anxiety of that. But I knew that I could, you know, as I swam the distance, I could do the distance. I also think that I kind of put them on par, really. I put them together. I couldn't separate the two. But I would always know that once I was out of the pool, or sorry, I say pool, out of the water, it would be like, phew, we've done this. Right. Okay. Let's get onto the pike now. Because actually that was like, yes, I suppose then the hardest part in my mind thinking, now I'm on the bike, and then we can get through that and then get onto the run, which is the most enjoyable part. And I would always say that, actually, because it was always like, you know, let's get these other bits done quickly so we can go running, sort of thing. And it kind of always kind of gave me the fuel to press on and to push on.
Yeah. Now the challenge with that is that you have the compounding effect of having two disciplines that were not your strengths and relying heavily on the final discipline, right? In the sense that with time cuts, or with being in slower traffic and being caught behind people, or just even having to deal with the elements, since you are, if there's bad weather, if there's anything else, you spend more time out in those conditions earlier on. Your run can be super fast, but it's tough to make that up, right? And and cyclists that go into triathlon many times, they benefit from having that middle ground, that really long stretch is their relative strength. That's when they spend most time out on course in that one discipline, and that's when they're on the bike. So it can, you know, having that being a strength is really helpful. What made you decide to go from the sprint and Olympic distances to go to the Ironman distance sort of triathlons, the really long ones?
Well, it's a bit of a story, but when I decided to take up a triathlon, I in typical fashion, I got myself a book. And so I read this book. It was Triathlon 101. I forget the author now. It's just escaped me. And in there, I had read that to be a triathlete, you had to do at least one event a year. But if you did an Ironman, you'd be forever a triathlete, whether you did one ever again. And I'm thinking, yeah, I want to be a forever triathlete. And so I had known from the beginning that I would do one. I think the question really was which, what perhaps more when I would do it. And I think after about, I think it was about seven seasons of triathlon, and I kind of came to the realization that, you know, I'd crossed the line, and fine, I would have exerted myself and I would feel triumphant, but I'd crossed the line. And I think, you know, there wasn't that real, you challenged yourself. And I kind of, you know, after that time came to the realization that it was, that I needed another challenge. And so it was perhaps now time ready to do the Ironman.
Yeah. So Ironman, let's talk. Was your first one Ironman Copenhagen?
That's correct. Yes.
And when was that?
So Ironman Copenhagen was in 2017.
How, that's a huge jump up going from Olympic distance. And then I don't think you did you do a half prior to that?
I did actually. I did a half in 2012. 2012 was a great year, London Olympics year. So I did a 12, I did a half in that year. It was kind of like, yeah, I suppose I was looking for another challenge, and I did that. That was okay. It was a sea swim. That was rough. That was very rough. But then, of course, we had to get to the, and so I did that in 2012, and then just carried on with the Olympic and sprint distances, you know, in the in between time. And so, you know, by the time I came to the realization, yes, I went, you know, for the full. And then I thought, this is kind of new. I mean, I'm, of course, runner, triathlete, so used to structured training, used to self-motivation, used to, you know, getting up and getting out. But I thought this is kind of like really big, and so I thought I'd get a coach as well. And so I actually did enlist a coach to help. And not so much with the training necessarily, but it was really, I wanted to kind of maybe benefit from the learning process too. You know, I'd done everything by myself in terms of, I'd done everything by myself to date, to that date. And so it was, I thought it'd be nice to get some professional, if you will, insight into, you know, training, into development, into progress, into why, you know, the plan might be this way or why to do that, et cetera. And so it was the kind of the whys and the wherefores of the training. And so, yes, I engaged a professional.
Yeah. So how did the race go?
It's interesting, actually. It was interesting. It was a bit rough to begin with. Yeah. It was a bit rough to begin with, actually, to be candid. And I think it was because when I was asking questions, there was a sense that maybe I was questioning authority or questioning the expertise, when I was just trying to understand the process. And so I was clear to say, this is my intention, this is my objective. But when I realized that it wasn't going down so well, I thought, okay, just fine, just do what you need to do, right? And forget all the other bits. And so just do as you're told, you know, type thing. Mm. And so, yes, I did that.
Yeah. And then going to like Ironman Copenhagen, let's talk through that race. You're big, it's a huge event, your first full distance one, probably windy knowing Copenhagen, probably cold water also knowing Copenhagen. How did the race end up unfolding for you?
It was interesting, actually. I got there went out with some friends, and I was a bit apprehensive about the swim, again, to be honest. I mean, I had done, at that point, I had done marathons before, so I'd run marathons before. I had done a few centuries as well on the bike. I'd never swum that distance, 3.8K swim. I think I would have done it, of course, in the training, or perhaps slightly less than that in the training, but it was still a bit daunting. Mm. And you get to self-seed, you know, and so for the swims, the swim pens, you know, how long you expect that it might take you. And so you seed accordingly. And so I seeded, tested the water out, actually. Oh, I had a surprise there, I have to say, because I'd gone out with some friends. And when I got to the swim start, I just went in to test the water with others. And I came out, and my brother and my niece were there, which was the most unexpected. But anyway, the waters were actually quite nice. It was actually my best swim. It was like I was being pushed along the water. It was absolutely phenomenal.
Cool.
It was a beautiful swim, and it really buoyed me up. You know, when I got out of the water, I thought, oh my word, we finished the swim. We have this, we've got this, we're on the way. You know, and yeah. So I was really excited. I was really, you know, just like the previous events, you know, you finally get out of the water, and then it's the run and the bike, and, you know, we can do this. And so I got onto the bike. The weather, they had said, was going to be a bit, you know, here and there. And I think, well, I think that's a lesson that I learned. And so I kind of faffed about a bit in transition. But anyway, got onto the bike. And then headed out, and it was okay. It was windy. It was really windy. But it was okay. I pushed, and I kept on going at the swim start. You know, they kept on making this announcement of, you know, every athlete will get 9 hours and 30 minutes to do the swim and the bike, And as I had planned with my coach, what our race strategy really was, you know, if you have a good swim, and if you could, you know, if you can do, you know, 20, 22, 23 kph on the bike, you know, that will be fine, you know, and save the legs for running. And so we were okay, and I was doing okay, you know, according to my time, according to everything. And it was a bit hard, I would confess, the bike stage was a bit hard. It was 2-loop. But we're pressing on, and I'm thinking, I'm doing this, and it's always hard anyway. It's never easy coming, you know, and so you just push through. And then I get to start the second loop, as I'm anticipating, actually now starting to get onto the second loop. And I get stopped by this marshal. And he points to his watch, and he tells me that I've hit the 13:45 cutoff. And his watch says 13:46. And I said, it's by a minute. You know, I mean, I'm thinking, cut off, how? Minute anyway, you know. And it was awful. It was awful. He wouldn't let me go, he wouldn't let me carry on. And then I'm thinking, okay, and then he wants to take my timing chip. And I'm thinking, okay, at least let me, you know, just ride back to T2, which was about 20 kilometers away. He calls a colleague over, and I'm thinking, for some reason, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought for some reason that they were going to just, I don't know, confirm and say, okay, you go on ahead or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. But actually what he did was he asked the guy to take the timing chip off me. And they stripped it off my ankle. And it was the most humiliating feeling, actually. I have to say, I was so, I just felt, and there's spectators and there's everybody there, and I just felt so violated in a sense. And then I got back on the bike. Well, I was actually still on the bike because I kind of was just across it. Sat on it, pedaled, and I had to then pedal back to T2. And what was also difficult about that was that, you know, I'm now in amongst these mostly men, you know, who are like the fast guys, you know, powering back, you know, to T2. And I'm thinking, okay, you're going to have to pucker up and just, you know, pedal like mad and see how much you can fit in with those guys somewhat, somehow, you know, and not be too much out of place. And so, you know, through tears, and I confess, I was heartbroken because it had been 6 months of committed, dedicated training. And I just felt so robbed of not having the chance to do it and not actually understanding how come. Because I'm still thinking, I mean, I've only been 5 hours and a half into this. You know, we've got, you know, we've got 4 hours.
Yeah.
Anyway, I get back down there, get into transition. And you can't actually, there's no other way to actually come out. Obviously, you know, you have to transition and go into the run. And so I had to transition to the run and go off out to the run out and be on the run course. And people were cheering because, of course, at that time, they hadn't seen, I think they had seen, I would have been one of two females they would have seen at that time.
Right. So they thought that you were leading.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I felt like a fraud. I felt so, it was really heavy, actually, I have to say. It was really, really awful. And then I, at some point, I think maybe some 300 meters, there was a feed station and some portaloos, and I just was able to find a way to just, you know, just kind of get out, you know, just... Mm-hmm. And then I went, you know, caught up with my friends, went to the hotel, and I was just bawling my eyes out. I was just so grief struck. I still couldn't understand what had gone on. I picked up the athlete's guide that I had printed out and read through and was trying to look to know what had happened and why it happened and why wasn't I aware? Why wasn't my coach aware? Why didn't we put this into our race strategy? And you could see there in very tiny print some of those, the cutoff on, you know, loop two of the bike stage, 13:45. I'm thinking, so yes, yeah, so that was it. It was heartbreak. It took me more than, you know, more than the training time to actually feel better about that. And actually, I don't think that I fully felt better about it, healed from it, until Hamburg. In truth. Because it was also compounded by some other bit of drama. But because I hadn't done the run, I was chatting with one of the athletes the next morning, or it was even that evening. And he had said, you know, you've not done the run, so your legs should be really still good. You know, you've put in all that training and that you should, he kind of suggested, or he did suggest, you know, find another event in a, you know, soon, 4 weeks, and go straight for it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, I thought about it, and I came back, when I got back to the UK, I discussed it with my coach, and he thought to do the same thing. I think also, and I think he was probably also feeling a bit bad that he hadn't actually spotted, or, you know,
the intermediate time cut. Yeah.
And so he said, yes, we should go ahead and let's do that. So I signed up for Ironman Emilia Romagna in Italy.
Yeah.
And 4 weeks it was, almost 4 weeks exactly it was. And so I got out there. And I really don't know what happened, actually. Mm. I really don't know what happened. Everything was okay, it seemed. Got to the swim, that race, that morning. And maybe a thousand meters or so into the swim. And I started to feel, my body just started to feel a bit weird. And I kind of was having, I had cramps in my legs, in my calves, in my thighs, in my quads, in my gastrocnemius muscles. And I couldn't understand how come, because I would never usually have cramps in a swim. You know, if I was having cramps or anything tight, it would be my feet. And it was if the waters were cold and I'd been in there for a while. And so I really, it was just, everything just seemed a little bit off. And so actually at one point I actually had to hold on to one of the Marshall's rafts and try and just work out the cramp. But anyway, I got out of the swim. It was one of those Australian exits. I hadn't done one of those before. Mm. So came out of it, I think it was about 2,500, ran across the beach, went back in and then did the last 1,300. I came out and chatted to my brothers. I was running through to transition. I just said, you know, that was a tough swim. You know, it was, and it was not tough because it's tough. You know, you're exerting yourself. It was just tough because the body just didn't seem fit enough or ready, or I don't know, something was wrong. Anyway, got onto the bike and pedaled, and it was good. It was all nice. And I'm thinking, okay, we're all good. We've passed that. And I was still, I'm thinking, we've done that. Let's carry on. And it just seemed like it was going okay. But then as I carried on into the bike, and I was very mindful of cutoffs, actually. And something else I had done. I was very mindful of cutoffs. And actually, something else I had also learned from the last event was to be ambitious in the place I seated myself on the swim. Mm. And so, you know, I seated myself with cutoffs in mind and giving myself extra time. Because had I seated, and in fact, I'd learned that from one of the ladies I'd met in Copenhagen, because she had seated herself about 20 minutes before I had. And she had said, no, that there was no way she could have swum at that pace and completed that time, but she was giving herself that extra time.
Did that as well. It's a good tip for a lot of athletes that are kind of coming into this and are new at that. Even though in an ideal world, everyone would have like very clear expectations on like and line up exactly where they should, they often line up further ahead than they actually should. And then what that creates is that cascading effect, so that everybody else then has to also line up earlier. Because if you are realistic with your expectations, you'll be so far back that you could suffer, you know, you could fall on the wrong side of a time cut. And the reality. Yep.
It is, which is kind of unfair. And I think really what should happen is that they should allow people to see themselves honestly, in quotes, and actually make any sort of on-course cutoffs, have those on-course cutoffs, be cognizant of that.
Be relevant to your start time.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. Yeah. You know, because that's the only just and fair way, because I honestly felt penalized for not so much being a slower swimmer, but by starting later. Uh-huh. And so anyway, I had seated earlier and carried on the bike in Emilia Romagna. It was beautiful. It was a lovely day as well. And then I just really started to cramp, you know, and I just kind of worked through and just carry on pedaling, And it was kind of a nice kind of route. It was a kind of nice and undulating. It was one big, you know, bit of a hill. And so you could kind of like, also still able to pedal reasonably well. Tracking very nicely, actually, very nicely indeed. And then I just got to a point where, I don't know, there weren't cramps anymore, but my body was kind of like in spasms. It was most weird. And so I had to try and, you know, find a place. I kind of got off my bike, and that was difficult because everything was just, you know, and found a little spot. There was one of the motorcycle marshals that had come and came to my aid as well. And I think he had also called the ambulance. And I'm thinking, I'll be fine. You know, I'll just take a moment. And I think I had a, you know, good, comfortable time to actually get back on the bike and get to transition and then get on second loop and carry on. So I was really tracking quite well. It took me a good while, but, you know, probably 45 minutes later, when I realized nothing was actually letting up, that I wasn't actually going to be getting on my bike and carrying on. I mean, I was in the kind of pain and contortions that just caused me to cry. I mean, it was so painful. I didn't really know what to do. And in the end, the ambulance came and they ambulanced me away. I mean, it was a drama. It was drama. And so I think that, well, not that I think, that really did just kind of heap upon the pains of Copenhagen. And so there was this whole question as to, you know, what was I actually doing here? And did I actually belong in this space? And, you know, all that kind of self-doubt that comes in, that doesn't really help, you know, the mind and doesn't help you push through or push on.
Certainly. Yeah, certainly doesn't help. And when you have... when you have a failure or a challenge like that, and then you have a second one that comes in such close proximity to that, what it feels like is it feels like it's validation of the doubt or the fears or anything else that you felt in that moment. At this point, what was your reaction in terms of looking forward? Were you thinking, well, I really want to figure this out? Or were you thinking, I just don't belong in this long distance triathlon stuff? Or where were you at in terms of looking down the road with your relationship in triathlon?
I guess I kind of didn't think I was going to give up because remember I was going to be a forever triathlete.
Yeah, that's right.
So I knew I just had to do whatever I needed to do to be able to realize what I wanted to do. So when I came back, I decided that I'd do something else because I was thinking, should I just go back and in 2018, you know, sign up for another one, or should I just take a year off, you know, thinking Ironman full distance and just, you know, do other things. And so I decided that I would actually just step away slightly and do other things. And so what I did was, it was pretty cool. I did this, I called it, and I got it from a friend. It was a medal a month challenge. So every month I'd do some event where I'd get some medal, as it were. And I was actually able to do all sorts of things. So whether it was run or a swim or a bike or a triathlon, you know, and so I did all sorts of things for every month of that year. And it was really healing, actually, because what it did was it helped me have these small little goals, achieve something, feel good, and then carry on and do something else. And it was really good. It was really nice. I did a half in that year as well. So I did another half in that year. That was my September challenge. Actually, September is my birth month, and so I did two challenges in that month just for good measure.
How cool! What a great way to rebuild confidence is to find, like, because that happens to everybody at every level. You lose confidence in where you're at. Mm-hmm. But going back to what you can do well and executing on that and then going through and putting yourself into new experiences, but that you can still execute on and accomplish. Yeah. Well, that's a fantastic approach. Super smart.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And it really did help. It helped a lot. And it was really from there that I thought, okay, you know, we can start to plan for when we would, you know, consider doing the Ironman, the full Ironman distance challenge.
Yeah. So what was your plan there in terms of how are you going to go about doing it differently? Were you putting off the experiences of the past and hoping that, hey, like I've proven to myself that I can do these hard things, that I can do this. So I'll just go back to it. Or were you trying to actually solve and kind of tussle with those demons that you had?
It's interesting. I mean, I knew whatever I needed to do was that I needed to be a faster cyclist. I mean, I had come to that conclusion, and I came to that conclusion really, you know, in Copenhagen, because I remember quite distinctly on the bike course, probably some 70 kilometers or so in, there was this guy that comes, you know, powering past me, and he's carrying, and I had seen him. We'd been in the same swim pen. And he had a difficult swim. So I was perhaps a stronger swimmer than he. In fact, I wasn't perhaps. I was a stronger swimmer than he. Mm. He was a better cyclist than I. Mm. Yeah, and I saw him on the run course. You know, at that time, and that was really kind of difficult. You know, at that time when, you know, when the sun has gone down and you still have the athletes running, you're thinking, I am supposed to be in amongst that group of people. You know, that's my group of people. I was never going to do it in 8 hours or 9 hours or 11 hours. you know, this is my group of people and I should have been there. And so I remember seeing him as well. I remember him distinctly because on the other thing that's difficult about that self-doubt is when you are underrepresented in a field such as that, mm-hmm. there is this additional, this additional layer mm-hmm. of weight and not belonging. You know, I know everybody or many an athlete, if not every athlete, sometimes feels, you know, self-doubt and not belonging. But, you know, when you're underrepresented in a field, it's just slightly heavier. And I remember him noticing him because he's a black guy as well. And so he was quite, again, distinguishable for me. And I'm thinking, you know, if I had been a stronger cyclist as he, I would be on the run course with him. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I knew I had to be a stronger cyclist. And so actually in that 2018 year of my medal a month, I did quite a few cycling challenges as well. Again, just to kind of work on my bike. And then it was at the end of 2019 that was a colleague of mine, and he talked to me about Trainer Road. In fact, he had used it to train for a century. He got this Ride London, a legacy from the mm-hmm. Olympic Games, mm-hmm. Which I've done a few times. And I was actually doing it that year too. And he was training, using Trainer Road to train for that in that 2019. And he gave me one of the referral licenses, which I then tried. And I thought, you know, this is actually pretty good. So I then got myself a smart trainer because I was determined to work on the bike, mm. you know, to become more proficient. And it wasn't that I couldn't do a distance. I just had to be stronger. I had to be more efficient, more mm-hmm. proficient at it. And so I got myself a smart trainer, used the 4-week referral license. And I became a trainer roadie, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
I absolutely love it. It was just, it's kind of like built for me, sort of, you know, because what you have is you've got the structured training, and we like structure, don't we? We like to build and mm-hmm. to grow. It has the coaching through it, you know, mm-hmm. the explanations, the things that I was looking for, you know, why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, how can I learn from this and apply it then? You know, and so it had all of that. You know, one thing I sometimes actually, when I'm doing one of those, especially one of those VO2 max ones, and you're trying to read, and I'm thinking, Chad, I can't read and pedal at the same time.
We know Chad does that and listens to classical music and prepares dinner while he does this. We don't know how, but yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. That was so amazing. And then actually, I signed up for Ironman Hamburg 2020. It was supposed mm-hmm. to be in June of 2020. And I'd have got myself a nice 6-month training plan. I had used the plan builder. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be with a mid volume.
Yeah.
And started training. And then of course, COVID happened.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah, and that had its own challenges, really, in terms of what to do and how to do it.
No doubt. And how did that affect? So, you had mentioned that your colleague was the one that that referred Trainer Road to you, but what do you do for work? And then how did COVID affect that? And in turn, how did that affect your ability to train?
That's actually interesting, you know, because it's kind of two-sided in a sense. So I work in tech. I work for a technology company, and you know, we would travel a lot, do a lot of outs, a lot of, you know, traveling around. And so what was interesting about COVID was the fact that there was no traveling. Mm. You know, you can't travel. And so in a sense, it allowed me to be true to my training. Mm-hmm. You know, and then of course, because you were not even if you weren't traveling out of town, out of the country, the need not to go into the office, you know, I was, you know, I'd do the training, you know, and so it kind of afforded me more time to be plain about it.
Yeah.
But of course you're training and you're not sure about the event. So there were all sorts of other things that were kind of just crazy and all of that. But what I then decided was that, you know, because I needed the focus to keep me anchored anyway, you know, because everything was up in the air, really, in terms of, you know, it was a novel situation for everybody. And so at least keeping and having routine was important for me to actually just kind of keep focused and to at least have some element of control, you know, in a certain sense. And so I just kind of trained as if the event was going to be happening. And just carried on with that in mind. Yeah. Because I said to myself, you know what, what's the worst that could happen? I'll be, forget that the event might be cancelled, but I could be a faster cyclist, right? And that's really what I'm aspiring to be.
So
it was like, just keep going for it. And so that's exactly what I did. And so I just carried on. And then it was perhaps in the April or so, yes, it was April of that 2020, that Ironman Hamburg said that they will... that they'll first of all come back to us, and then later on they said about after 4 weeks they kind of said, you know, they will postpone the event to the September of that year. And that kind of left me in a quandary, really. I wasn't too sure what to do, because I'm thinking, you know, September in the UK, we've not done so very well. Nobody's done so very well, but we've not done so very well. I began to think, you know, in Germany, they perhaps managed it a lot better than we have. And I realized that I couldn't work on their timetable. You know, it might be okay for them to have an event, but, you know, I didn't know whether I could even travel out or whether I was ready to, besides which we couldn't even swim. The pools and everything were closed. There was nothing really going on. And so they had given the option as well to defer. And so I opted to defer to 2021. So it was going to be in June in 2021. And so I then kind of carried on with my training plan, because I thought that was a cool thing to do, because, you know, I still had the aspiration of being that stronger, faster cyclist. And so I carried on doing that kind of training, and I kind of laughed at myself on that, the fact that I was now a duathlete as opposed to a triathlete, because all I was doing was running and biking. I carried on with that. But what was also quite liberating about it was the fact that I wasn't training for anything, really. And I think I've always been training for something. So it was kind of nice not to actually, I don't know, to kind of not, you know, and just ride your bike, just get on the trainer, you know, go for fun rides, do various other things, you know. And so I was able to do that, perhaps a lot more than I ever have, especially, you know, training for an Ironman, because then every amount of time is precious. And because you've only got limited amounts of it in a day, you can't think, oh, I'll go on that social ride, or I'll go and hang out and do that. But no, because I've got 2 hours and I've got to do it now, and I've still got other things I need to do. Yeah. And so it kind of just freed me up a little bit more. And so that was it. And then in the end, what happened was we couldn't do it in June. I think it was about in March that they decided that it was going to have to be in August. So they postponed it to August when the vaccine programs had started to take better hold in Germany. Because interestingly, then we were ahead in terms of vaccine programs and vaccinations than Germany. And so, you know, they had to catch up. But what it did do then for me was allowed me time to swim, because the pools then opened up. Outdoor pools opened up at the end of March for us of 2021, and I thought, okay, fine, I can, because I feel I could quite easily in 8 weeks get myself in good bike swim shape to do that 3.8k, but then of course they had actually postponed the event to August, and so I had another 6 months of training, which actually at the time sounded quite a lot, and I was almost disheartened by the fact that 6 months again, you know.
Yeah.
I just carried on and carried on.
Do you think that in this process you had kind of like you had work to do on your relationship with the bike, right? After the experiences that you had at Copenhagen and then also in Italy. And this experience of giving you a lot of time to spend with the bike, and also giving you time just to enjoy coffee rides and enjoy the more social side of it, I'm sure it really helped with your relationship on the bike.
It did, actually, but I wouldn't say my relationship on the bike was bad. I still loved my bike in spite of those things that happened. You know, I still loved going out on the bike, whether it was training or hanging out with friends or whatever. So I still enjoyed those. I think what was interesting or what was good was that I was just getting, I suppose, really the way I assess it is more time to get stronger, to get faster. And that was really happening. I could actually see it. And my FTP, it didn't go up so humongously, but I knew that I was stronger. You know, I could do a certain route that I might have done before in time past and find out that I'm 3-4 kph faster than I had been before, or find myself powering up a hill a lot easier than I had ever powered up it before. And so there was a lot of things there that I'd actually seen. I think the other thing really was again, a lot in the mind too, because through the podcast, when you're talking about fueling, you know, recovery, some of the bike technique and efficiency, just actually having a space where you are talking about cycling and everybody is kind of feel safe and people are sharing freely and you're learning equally freely. And you're thinking, oh, so that's just not my paranoia then. Oh, everybody's kind of like that. You know, and it kind of gives you that sort of comfort thing, right? And so there was a lot for me that it wasn't just about the bike, but it was also just about that I learned through those podcasts, through the podcast that you guys do, which have really been absolutely instrumental for me, really. Because I think fueling was one of those big ones. I would tend to do a fasted ride or a fasted workout, not because I was worried about weight or anything, but I don't know, just because, you know, it's too early. I can't eat. And I just go out and do the workout and then I come back and then I eat and then I carry on. But I learned to pay more attention, closer attention to the fueling and then the recovery so that I could be ready again for the next, a session, especially as there were loads of them, you know, twice a day, you know, 6 days a week, you know, so there was a lot of things that I had to make sure that I was ready for. And so that really helped.
Yeah. The nutrition is a massive part, particularly with triathlon, when you're dealing with the demands of three sports plus balancing the responsibilities of life. That's a lot of load on your body and you have to fuel the work, you know, it tears you down otherwise. So you mentioned that, you saw improvements in like on routes or on climbs and you saw, like you said, it wasn't a huge increase in FTP, but you started to feel different on the bike and feel stronger on the bike. Did you feel, looking forward to Ironman Copenhagen, which just happened. Did you feel more prepared coming in and more confident this time coming in? Or were you still nervous because of the past experiences?
It's kind of interesting, you know, I think again, a bit of both. Mm-hmm. And then of course you had the COVID overlay, right? So I was actually now in a taxi for the first time, heading to an airport on a plane. Not done that in how many, you know, a year and a half almost. And so what I found I needed to do for myself at that point was actually in the taxi. I remember it quite clearly. I had to ask myself, what is the anxiety here? Is it because you're traveling or is it because of the event? You know, and then I realized it was actually really because of the travel. And so I thought, okay. Mm-hmm. And so it was just taking step by step. I was excited about the event, really. I knew I was prepared. Just as for the other ones, I knew I had been prepared. At least I had trained as, you know, as hard as possible. I knew I was ready. I knew I had good race strategy. I mean, I'd studied and swatted. I knew every cutoff that there was. I even realized, oh, there's a cutoff on the run as well, is there? Okay, then, because there was a cutoff on the run. So I knew all of those things. And I think what I determined was that I would just go and have, I kind of thought, let me just have a training session. Let me just go out and do as if I was training, because it's nothing really different to actually if I was going for a long swim or a long bike or a long ride. The only thing I have to be mindful of are the cutoffs. And so that's kind of the way I approached it. But the other thing that was there that was scary was what had happened to me in Emilia-Romagna. And I didn't understand what that was. And when I had spoken to my coach about it, my coach then at the time about it, he kind of put it down to, or said it must have been something I'd eaten. you know, that had kind of just unsettled my body chemistry or something like that. And so that too had kind of left me kind of concerned, you know, what should I eat? What should I not eat? What should I not eat? You know? And so whilst I was out there, you know, I was kind of just trying to eat plain stuff, you know, stay away from this or stay away from that, just as plain as possible. And I actually got out there, first time ever, actually got out there on the Monday, because I wasn't sure what the protocol would be. And so by the time I had to finalize my flight and finalize the hotel, I thought, okay, if I get out on the Monday and if I have to be in quarantine for 5 days and do a test and release, at least I've got enough time to do that. And then I can be out on the Thursday, Friday, and then I can do whatever all I needed to do. But as it happened anyway, so I got out on the Monday, but, you know, I didn't need to. I knew that at the time or before the time then anyway. But when I was making all the arrangements, I didn't know. And it wasn't really clear. And anything could happen because it was all so
yeah. And that's just the world we live in now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely yeah. Crazy. And so I got out on the Monday. And I think that actually helped because usually I'd get out on a Thursday and you're kind of already in race weekend and race, right? Mm-hmm. So in any of the in with the halves I've done and with the fulls I've attempted, and I think that helped because I then settled, kind of eased into the day, and I've taken some time off work for all of that period, and so it was kind of backing away from that as well, and then just easing in, and I think that was really quite helpful. What was interesting though was I had a. Just to add a bit of drama to perhaps the rest of the concern and the anxiety that I'm trying to work on was I had a bit of a fall. So I put my bike back together on the Monday night when I had arrived and went out for a spin on the Tuesday. And it was a bit crazy. The roads, there was lots of construction, road closures, you know, traffic is arrows pointing that they're going this way, there are crosses there and traffic is coming that way. And everything was just... And I was now lost in the city, trying to get back to the hotel. And finally, I'm kind of on the other wrong side of the road. You know, traffic is coming in this way. And I'm thinking, okay, let me just try and get on. I just misnegotiate this curb. And the next thing I know, I'm on the floor.
Yeah.
And so I literally go into that event having taken from that Tuesday morning right up until this Saturday night, ibuprofen and paracetamol because I was in pain.
Oh, it's so many. It's been delayed for so long, right? Like you had this event that you're planning on doing. It's been delayed for so long, and then the week of, that's when something happens, right? Coming up into it. And you had worked so hard on and done a good job of trying to identify sources of anxiety and address them appropriately, give them the attention they deserve. And you showed up with time to spare. It just shows that you can try to prepare as much as you can, but chaos still happens.
Yeah. And, you know, I came to that realization as well. In fact, I did a half Ironman in that 2019. It was in Vichy in France. And I was on the bike stage of that event, and it was a hard stage. It was a hard profile. And I'm up there it was sunny, it was hard, and I said to myself, I said, you know what, Joy, whether you complete this or you don't, I said, you are an Ironman, because I've been doubting this all the while. You know, but out there in the heat, in the pain, in the pushing, I said, my God, I'm an Iron Man, whether I finish that or not. And I think this is something that I realized that is a lot within us. We have to really own these things ourselves, you know, I suppose. It's our doubts. I guess that's why they call them self-doubts, right? You know, we have to deal with them personally. And in those hills, I actually just came to that realization. And I didn't actually complete the event that day. I got back to T2, had just missed the cutoff, had some cramps. It was really terrible. It was a terribly hot day. It was a terribly, terribly hot day. And I didn't feel bad in the slightest.
Because you started to believe it. You didn't let that result start to, you know, those challenges define you as much as you found your own definition.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. And so when I had that fall, you know, again, that realization that, you know what, things can happen, you know, things outside of your control can happen. And it doesn't mean, because it's making, you know, someone's an Olympian or they're a gold medalist, they didn't get the gold this time, doesn't mean they're not an Olympian or they're not a gold medalist or they're not, you know, they're not a successful, brilliant athlete or whatever it might be. And so I came to that kind of, I just resolved that, you know, for myself. And that was really good. And so what I had to then do was just figure out how to manage what I had put myself into. I was thankful that I was okay. In fact, I think one of the first things I said was, oh, my body. And it wasn't so much, you know, it was like, you know, this machine of mine, what have I done to it? You know, it was hoping that it was okay and that I could perform and that my bike was okay. And thankfully my bike was okay. Where I'd hurt, it didn't seem to bother me if I was like that and I'd gone out running the next day or if I were running. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'll just keep on taking the ibuprofen and the paracetamol and I'm sure I'd be fine. And so I did, and I just didn't let it. I didn't let it bother me. I actually didn't let it bother me.
Yeah.
And on that race morning, it was all exciting. I have to say, we haven't even talked about that race.
Yeah, and I'm gonna give like a spoiler alert in the sense that we've already covered it. You finished, which is awesome. You got that medal. You fulfilled your own prophecy, right? In the sense that you achieved what you set out to do. I want to talk about this race in the lens of what you did differently this time compared to what you had done previously. So what were unique things, new things, novel things that you had done? We already talked about the preparation and how you had done a great job of trying to give yourself plenty of time to get there and done that sort of thing. Your training, you also were able to get in a position where you could do your training and you could check those boxes and you had plenty of time to do it as it kept getting pushed back. But let's talk race execution. How did you execute differently on this day than you had in the past?
I stayed very calm, really. I mean, when it came to Copenhagen, I guess I had never hit upon anything like that before, you know, in terms of that cutoff and that disappointment. And so I went in there really excited and, you know, and eager, as well as, you know, slightly apprehensive of, you know, of all that was going on, but not feeling out of depth. This time it's like, you know, you could probably say I came to it like a veteran.
Yeah.
I came to it with quite a lot of experience. And so I had said, you know, it's just going to be a long day. You're just going to go for a long swim, a long bike, and a long run. I seeded myself because I determined that I would always seed myself now ahead so as to give time. Something I faffed around with in Copenhagen was trying to sort out stuff on after I'd come out of the swim. It's always difficult trying to get things onto a wet body. And so I had just determined that whatever I was going to use on the bike is what I would have under my wetsuit. And so that was it. Minus the socks and the sure. cycling shoes, of course. so that's what I did. And that saved me some time. The bike stage was a bit difficult because it was it was windy, it was raining, it was actually quite challenging, and so you hadn't quite dried out when you came back from the run. But I also had said to myself I would work hard to give myself at least a nice good clear hour as best I could for any of those cutoffs to allow for any sort of eventuality if there's anything, you know, that I had to take care of, hoping that I didn't have anything to take care of, hoping that I'd have no puncture and that my body would actually be in good shape. And all I had to do was just push it, you know, push it through. And so I did that. And then I decided that I would obviously fuel. So I had a bike, my bike bag on my saddle bag. And I had just put it with all the stuff that I was going to consume over the bike stage, because that was really where I was going to do most of the feeding, the fueling, as it were. And so I had it nicely laid, what I'll have now, what I'll have in 30 minutes, what I'll have in the next 30 minutes and all of that. Mm-hmm. And then I had my bottles. I was going to make sure that I gave myself every opportunity to get onto the run, because I'd never had that opportunity before.
Right.
To get onto the run. And so I wanted to pedal and fuel and ensure that I got onto that run, you know. And that was all I wanted to see, you know, just get out, get onto that. And it really wasn't until I got to T2 thinking, my God, I had an hour or something like that, you know, before that end of stage cutoff. Yeah.
You had made it.
Oh, wow. It was amazing because I said, okay, I have made it. And I thought, you know, so I changed because I also wanted to change. So I wanted to have proper running gear on. And so I did that. So I had a bit of a long transition there, but I needed to change. And again, I was all wet, you know, because it had just been, it stopped raining now, but it'd been also wet. And then I got onto the run and I just had to keep running to pass, because on the third lap, you had to get there by a certain time. Otherwise you could not carry on. And so I had to make sure.
You were focused on that, right?
I was focused on that. And so I pushed as hard as I could. I had some issues with my shins to begin with. And I'm thinking, oh no. but then I carried on running, but it was a difficult run. So I don't know whether I think maybe I pushed quite a lot to try and get to 31, which was where that cutoff was. Because the last 10K was difficult. And I was running, walking. By the time I was doing that last 10K, I think I was walking, running. I don't think I've walked more in doing a running than ever in that event. It was quite interesting, actually. And then
with
I'm
good
thinking,
reason.
Well, you're a runner and you're walking.
Yeah, with good reason. You've done a whole lot prior to that, right? If I can get into the mindset of what happened when you had the pains in your shins and those things that came up that were like, oh no, something is wrong. How did you react to that? Like what were the things that you told yourself or the things you did internally to manage those?
I did quite a few things. I did them on the bike too, because again, it was raining. You know, when it rains, there's lots of, invariably you have punctures, right? People get punctures, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, and you're on the bike course and then you've seen this person, you pass them and they've got a puncture and you're thinking, oh God, you know, and in truth, I'd say a little prayer that my body and that my bike would be good.
Yeah.
You know? And so I carried that too on the run, you know, and I realized actually that I wasn't doing it as much on the run as I had been on the bike. Maybe I should have done it a bit more. But anyway, it would just be to say the prayer. But when the shins happened, I kind of just stopped and rubbed them a little bit, kind of just give them some more, because it had been cold all day. It had been raining. So the body was, so it was a bit difficult. I guess the body was a bit cold. So I just kind of tried to warm them up a little by rubbing. Loosened my shoelaces a little bit, so the elastic, my elastic laces. Mm. And then just prayed that it'd be okay and that I'd be fine. And it was. And so I carried on. And it was just always just to try and just stay calm, I suppose, is really what I just kept on telling myself. Because I also I'd done some calculations. I know people power walk a marathon in 5 hours. Mm. And so I'm thinking, even if I have to power walk it, you know, maybe I could still do it and complete, you know, and still cross the finish line. And so I just kind of stayed calm. In fact, it was only when I was on the run that I actually allowed myself to think, you know, that we had this. I didn't do that on the bike, not for a moment, not until I actually put the bike on the rack and I had transitioned. But it was then I actually began to think that, yes, we have got this. And then by the time I passed that 31K mark, it was like, you know, I could crawl to the finish line, you know, I could crawl for the next 10K and still get there in time, because I had given myself enough time and I was grateful for that. I was glad for that. So yes, it was just a bit of positive thinking and a bit of prayer.
what did it feel like to cross the line? And I want to set some context for this as well. You mentioned before, there aren't many Black triathletes. Sika Henry is the first Black woman triathlete to hold a pro card. And she's a previous guest on this podcast and she's an inspiration. You are in a situation where you have a track record of not having finished this distance. So you have two reasons to doubt. Then you have all the different opportunities that you've had in between then to really listen to that doubt, to further cement it. And then when you look at a field, you also, you don't see yourself reflected, right? Mm-hmm. So you have all of these things adding up to tell yourself, the bad voices in the back of your head, that you don't belong. What did it feel like to cross that line? What did it mean?
It was absolutely amazing to cross that line. I had my hands flung up in the air. I mean, it was amazing because actually I'd seen that line a few times. As you carry on the lap, you know, you could either lap or the runway to the finish. Mm. You know, so I had anticipated it, you know, from about 10K, 20K, 30K effectively, and seeing people run down there and thinking, that's going to be me. That's going to be me soon. That's going to be me. And when I came powering down there, you know, coming on the runway there, actually all of a sudden feeling like I could just run forever. Mm-hmm. And then I crossed, and it was just victorious. I kind of threw my hands up, and then I began to beat my chest because it was the most amazing feeling, the most amazing achievement. I was really, really pleased and proud of myself, without a doubt.
Yeah, right. Right. And once again, rightfully so. I feel like on this podcast in particular, we've interviewed so many Ironman triathletes in particular that are shooting for like 9 hours and 8 hours. And I think that we lose perspective on how hard it is to even do one. And then when you factor in all the other factors that you were dealing with, it's even more difficult. What an accomplishment. And I love that what you did is you had business unresolved, and instead of leaving it as such, you chose to take it head on, and you chose to believe that you were going to do what you set out to do. That's powerful. That extends far beyond sport. I'm really grateful for your example, Joy. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Joy, what's next for you? You're an Ironman. What's next for you now?
What's next? It's really interesting, you know, because I'm thinking, you know, when I was registering that day, registering in Hamburg at the event, they'd asked whether I wanted to enter in for the championships. And I'm thinking, oh, I never thought about that before. So I don't know. I would honestly like to think that there are a few more. I mean, I certainly will do a few more halves. I believe I will do another one. I think that I can, I should like to be able to run the distance.
Yeah. What a goal that would be, right?
I'd like to be able to run the distance. So, so let's wait and see. But in the meantime, I've also got my eye on this, six majors, marathon majors, which I haven't done before, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So get all of those done. London, Tokyo, Berlin, Paris, Boston, New York, Chicago. I've only got London. So I've also got that kind of on my mind. I might do that over the next year or two, whilst fitting in a few, maybe half Ironman.
How cool. Joy, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and share your story like this. It's hugely inspiring. Personally, very inspiring. I have a very big race coming up here. And if you're listening to this in the past, it's whatever it's going to be.
Cape Epic.
Yeah. And I'm just hoping I can finish, really. Like, we'll see. So this is really inspiring for me. And I appreciate this. This is fantastic. Joy, if people want to get in touch with you, are you on social media or anything else where people can find you there?
I am on Twitter,
awesome.
And I think that's just about it. And then LinkedIn, but I think that's perhaps a bit more professional. And it's JABOIM at Twitter.com.
Perfect. We'll link to that below in the description on this podcast and on the YouTube video description as well. And if you're listening to this and you want to share your story about how Trainer Road has helped you accomplish something, please do so. You can do it at trainerroad.com/SAP. Doesn't matter what your level of success is that you've achieved with Trainer Road, I'd love to hear about it. So please go over there and share that and share this podcast with your friends and go check out Trainer Road like Joy did to go accomplish whatever big goals you have. So thanks, Joy. We'll talk to you soon.
Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed, Jonathan. Thank you.